Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 88. This is our Open Championship Tip Show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's Open Championship Tips to Paul Williams and podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good evening, gentlemen.
Evening, guys.
Good evening, guys.
GolfBettingSystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we're available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Now, we might actually squeak over 4,000. It's going to be a big week with the Open. So get yourselves along to our Facebook group and come along and join us and get us through the 4,000 member barrier.
4,000? 5,000. 5,000.
5,000 barrier. That's right. Paul's available at Golf Betting on Twitter. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. I'm at Bamford Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify and a myriad of different pod channels and YouTube. Now, we're asking for a couple of things from you. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. And as ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Leave your name in the review so we can read them out on the podcast. And also, if you are in the growing band of YouTube listeners, we had 900 listeners to our Open Championship preview pod on YouTube over the weekend, guys. Very good. Very good
indeed.
That is impressive. Please subscribe and like the show if you are listening to this on YouTube. Right, enough of the faff. Let's talk Open Championship. I'll say at the top, if you want details around the course and some details around trends and the likely trends of winners, listen to our previous podcast, our preview podcast, which was number 87. And there is a whole section on there in terms of the course and winners' trends over the last few years. But we don't intend to go over that. We're going to talk players. And we're going to talk who we're actually backing in this particular podcast. Do you want to take us quickly, Paul, over the leading lights in the market right now and what we're looking at in terms of prices?
Yeah, it is, as we tend to see with these majors, it is a pretty open affair. None of these days when you've got a Tiger Woods at kind of 3 or 4 to 1 absolutely dominating it. It's long gone are those days, and quite rightly so with the talent that sits there at the top of world golf at the moment. Right now, so we're talking, it's 20-6 UK time on Monday. Rory McIlroy is the favourite, and pretty clear favourite at the moment. 9-1 available but Rory. Brooks Koepka 10-1. Generally, there's a little bit of 11-1 out there, but generally 10-1. Dustin Johnson 16-1. John Rahm 16-1. Best price. There's a few players who are starting to be pushed out during the course of the day. One of which is Tiger Woods, who's gone from around 16s to 20-1. There's no love out there for Tiger right now. Perhaps it's kind of this rhetoric with his back and needing warmer conditions, which I kind of concur with, I must say. I think, he's been quite vocal about it himself, hasn't he? And I think it probably needs it to be Floridian-type conditions to be
playing
his best golf.
I'll bet he's got, like, one of those battery-powered thermal vests you can wear during the winter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think...
Are they legal to wear on the golf course, Ben?
I don't know. I'm not...
Pumping 35 degrees centigrade heat into your back as you're playing golf. But yeah, I think punters are picking up on the kind of the potential that Woods may not be at his very best because of the conditions, but we'll see. Justin Rose 22-1, and then you start to go into some of the players that are a little bit longer. 28-1 Francesco Molinari, 28-1 Xander Schauffele. 30-1 Henrik Stenson, who's been very heavily backed so far, is one of the few at the top of the market who's been backed in all the way through
today.
Just
people listening to our preview podcast.
Yeah, it is. It's either that or it's the way that he played last week. I might say it's the latter, to be fair, but he clearly went through a number of holes. He got through a big chunk of last week at Renaissance Club without making a bogey, and he played some good stuff, didn't he, Henrik?
He did, very good stuff.
And again, punters have picked up on that 30-1 best price right now that you're going to get about Henrik Stenson, 30-1 Tommy Fleetwood as well. And Adam Scott, who we mentioned on the preview podcast as well, as having flown in and spending a lot of time on his preparation work for this week, 33-1, but he's been backed in heavily as well, 25-1.
I heard
22-1, in fact, in place.
I heard this morning from the course that he's been there 4 or 5 days. He's been down the local pub having a few pints of Guinness at night.
Has he?
Mm. Well, that's part of your preparation.
Absolutely. I agree.
It'd be rude not to while you're
all work and no play is not a good combination.
No, absolutely. I'll just take you through a few others because there are some names, some big names that are kind of beyond what we've talked about already. So Justin Thomas, 33-1 in spots. Ricky Fowler, no love for Ricky at the moment, 35-1. Same price for Patrick Cantlay. Jason Day, 40-1. Hideki Matsuyama, 40-1. Jordan Spieth, 40-1. And last week's massive letdown, Matt Kuchar, 40-1, who hit the lead on Saturday afternoon and then just trod water, didn't he, for the rest of the event, until he kind of flattered to deceive right at the end of his back nine on Sunday. 5 birdies on the trot, and then just as he was threatening to make it to take an each-way place, decided to throw in another bogey. But that's enough of last week, isn't it? So, 40-1 bar after that. And you've got the likes of Bryson, 40-1. 45-1, in fact, you get about Bryson. Matt Wallace, 50-1. So there's some big names up there that are attracting a decent price this week. But overall, it's very, very open to me, I must say.
It's very open. I tell you what, I think it's noticeable. Let's talk bookmakers. And then we can move on to where we're at in terms of picks. What is noticeable at the 2019 Open is, I think, personally, having covered this now for over 10 years, this is the most competitive major championship from a bookmaking perspective. They are absolutely fighting over your business. We are seeing 6 firms at 10 places each way. And so there's two camps in the market. And what I've done... literally 10 minutes ago, before we started recording this at 5:45 UK time on Monday, you know, it's just a view, it's a line in the sand. But I've looked at the top 20 players in the market and who's offering best price. So I've divided it into those bookmakers who are 10 places each way, 50 odds, and just overall who is best price. And it's become clear. If we take the top 10 each way bookmakers, William Hill are top price or equal top price on 14 of the top 20 in the market. And that is the best by quite a chunk over and above Betfair Sportsbook and Paddy Power. So for listeners out there, and they aren't really a brand what we've mentioned in the past on the basis that their betting proposition wasn't exactly stellar, but you have to say they have certainly stepped up to the mark for the 2019 Open, undoubtedly. If you click through in the description to Paul's betting preview and you haven't got a William Hill account and you fancy a bit of this action, 10 place each way, 50 odds and some fantastic prices, you can access a bet 10 and get £30 in free bets. New customer offer, which is available using promo code C30 via our website golf betting system. So that's William Hill, 10 place each way, the best operator that we're seeing. If you're looking at best price, there is only one operator really to go with, or one bookmaker. Top 20 players, Bet365, are 8 places each way of 50 odds on the 2019 Open. And they are best price or equal best price on 16 of the top 20 players in the betting market. So again, if you haven't got a Bet365, and you're looking to open a new account, get yourself to Paul's preview and you can access their new customer offer via the Golf Betting System website. Of course, key terms available. So yes, Bet365 and William Hill look to me to be leading the way for the bookmakers at the 2019 Open.
It's a good move from William Hill, as you said. They're not a bookie that we tend to focus on because their proposition doesn't tend to be as strong. I mean, one thing you'll say about William Hill is that they push their prices out very, very early on a Monday now.
Mm. So oh, yes, they do.
You'll often find that there'll be some outlying prices that you can snap up very early on on the Monday morning.
Traditionally, it was always Bet365 first up. But yeah, the last 2 to 3 months, William Hill was religiously number one. First bookmaker out.
Absolutely. So again, if you're the kind of punter who does a lot of research the week before or over the weekend of an event as it's coming up the following week, and you've got an idea of the kind of price and the kind of players that you want to back, it's well worth looking, well worth checking.
Early bird.
Early on a Monday.
Yeah, early bird price.
Yeah, by 10 o'clock usually, that kind of time on a Monday, there's often a market up from William Hill. And if you see what you think is an outlying number, then...
Grab it, yeah. They
can grab it, and they often make some massive corrections once they've seen how the market lies. So if it feels out of kilter, it may well be out of kilter. But yeah, in the context of this week, good move for them, and it's got to be applauded 10 each way. And as you said, Steve, some cracking prices to boot. So now, good stuff from them.
You worked studiously across the weekend, so well done for that. I was swanking away around Wimbledon yesterday, and you were grafting in your office, sweating, while I was just drinking cool drinks with the wife, watching some tennis. But anyway, that's the way the crooked comes.
You're just rubbing it in, Steve.
I am. Yeah, it's great.
I thought I saw somebody really ugly in the royal box. That explains it now. I don't know how you got in there or past security, but
that was John Rahm, wasn't it? From what I saw. But where was I? You've completely taken the wind out of my sails. But I know for a fact that you've released your betting preview, Paul, at Golf Betting System. So why don't you highlight your shortest two? Because I know you've gone for six this week. If you highlight your two shortest prices, who you think have got the best chance, and then we can then talk to Barry about his two, and then we can come to us, and we'll see what kind of... if we've got any players that we're all agreeable on.
You kind of go around the houses with this, particularly with a market like this, or particularly with an event like this, because you can quite justifiably make a case for Rory McIlroy. I mean, I at the back end of last week, I was really quite tempted to go deep with Rory. You know, his ball striking, we know it could be fantastic. He holds the old course record from the old course, having shot 61 round here as a 16, 17 year old, whenever he was at the time. Clearly, he's going to have a massive local support. But for me, there's just something just not quite 100%. His ball striking hasn't been quite 100%. His accuracy, his greens regulation just hasn't quite been where I'd want it to be, I think, to want to really attack and back Rory McIlroy and give it absolutely everything for this. Because you could, you know, if you really feel that strongly about a player at the top of the market, you could put a lot of your eggs in one basket. And particularly with 10 places each way, you could play a strong each way card and very little else. But I couldn't quite see it, I must say. Brooks Koepka, his recent major performances are just incredible, aren't they? 1-2, 1-2 from his last four. Was he won three of the last? Four of the last eight or something that he's played. It's absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
But again, if you look at his record, the Open Championship is the weakest of his four majors, and by distance as well. And again, if you're trying to pick a tenuous hole in any of the guys at the top of the market, and usually it is going to be a tenuous hole because you're kind of trying to convince yourself against a player rather than for them, that's the only real hole that I can picking Koepka. For me, I've started my team with John Rahm, and we discussed John Rahm last week in the preview show. We were asked a question, actually, who we thought was going to be the most likely player under 30 to win a major. And John Rahm was one of the ones that we were quite unanimous about, the three of us, plus another guy we'll discuss in a few minutes. I think if there's a player who's going to break through and certainly has the capability and ability to win a major championship, it's John Rahm. If you look back, and we talked about trends in the last podcast, the form of the winners is pretty outstanding at the Open Championship. And just to summarise, Phil Mickelson, when he won in Scotland, when he won in 2013, had won the week before in Scotland. Mm-hmm. McIlroy in 2014 had won at Wentworth a few weeks beforehand. Zach Johnson had three top six finishes in his previous four events coming into the 2015 Open, which he won. Stenson had won in Germany a few weeks before in 2016. Spieth had won the Travelers on his last start in 2017. And last year, Francesco Molinari went through this stretch where the Open Championship was his third win in six starts. He'd won at Wentworth, he'd won the Quicken Loans. He'd finished runner-up twice in that stretch as well. So yeah. These players are all very, very obviously in form.
They're white hot. If you look, white hot.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you look down the list, there's not that many you'd say that really correlate with that. I mean, one of them, having won again last week, Bernd Wiesberger, you'd look at his form line and actually you think, well, do you know what? That doesn't look completely out of line with the kind of winning form that we've got. For me, I mean, his price is halved, as you'd expect, because punters have jumped all over it. For me, the difference between a John Rahm and a Bernd Wiesberger, they're at a different level for me. And if someone is more likely to win the Open Championship this week, then it's going to be a John Rahm rather than Bernd Wiesberger. Third at the US Open, at Pebble Beach. Second at Valderrama. Now, that second at Valderrama was a big breakthrough for me, because we've talked ad nauseum about his frustration and his weakest suit being when the going gets tough at these events. And to finish second at Valderrama, which is a proper exacting test, it's a tough test of golf, was particularly strong. I think he topped total driving. He was second for ball striking that week, and really impressed me, I think, the way he went round and handled a tough track. And then he went and won at La Hinch. And we said last week, before we'd really seen what Renaissance Club was going to be like, that La Hinch was far more likely to be a comparable and compatible warm-up for the Open Championship. And having seen the guy sauntering around in 22 under at Renaissance last week, I think the form that anyone showed at La Hinch the week before the Irish Open is going to be far more tangible for this week than those who performed last week. So winning his second Irish Open at La Hinch is another big tick in the box. And again, identical stats as well. He led the field for total drive and he was second for ball striking. John Rahm is playing some outstanding golf from tee to green. Again, if you're going to pick a hole, and if I've picked holes in Rory and I've picked holes in Koepka, then the hole that you pick in John Rahm is that his Open Championship record isn't good. He's finished 59th, 44th missed cut from his three starts. Mm-hmm. Yet he's won two Irish Opens. He won a Spanish Open on a Lynxy-type track.
Yep.
In fact, his record on the European Tour, not all in Europe, by the way, but on his record on the European Tour, 14 starts, four wins, four more top fives. Mm. He clearly feels very comfortable playing this side of the pond. And for me, I think he's got a huge chance. 16-1, not the longest price in the world, but I think, with the each-way terms on offer this week, that's a cracking each-way bet. And I think he's got a great chance at the top of the market to win his first major championship, despite what he wore when he went to Wimbledon the other week.
I did tell him not to, but he didn't listen to me.
He likes to make a statement, doesn't he?
My understanding is, Barry, is that you're on Rahm, and I'm on Rahm as well.
I haven't taken the plunge on him yet.
You haven't?
Oh, Barry. No. I know.
Barry. I backed him on the exchange. I just had to get involved.
Yeah, the thing that freaked me out was that Open Championship record. It's just kind of weighing on me for that 16-1. Yeah, I don't know. Look, it's still Monday. There's plenty of time for me to get a little bit loose with adding more, but I haven't got many bets out there in terms of like numbers of golfers who I've backed. I've got three bets on the outright market so far. and two I've gone quite heavy on. So, yeah, the Ram one is a debate.
Who's your shortest price that you've gone for?
I do like Ram. Out of those top guys, just seems to make the most sense in terms of price and incoming form. And I certainly, that was something that kind of led me to Molinari last year, albeit quite late in the day, and didn't get the best value on him, but still had the pick. And like I said, if he wins, we'd look back at it and saying, well, of course he won. He was playing the best coming into it. So, and Ram is definitely making a case for himself playing one of the best in the world coming into this. So, until such time as I probably cave and to you guys bullying me into it, for now, my shortest price is Henrik Stenson, who I pulled the trigger on last week and managed to have one of the Paddy Power boosters and got him at 40-1. So that was nice. So I've I took Stenson. Obviously, would love to win on him again. I had him the last time he won in that, probably my favourite Open Championship of all time, which is the battle against Mickelson. Even if I didn't have the bet on him, I think that statement stands true. It was just remarkable to watch. And he's been just getting better week on week for the last couple of months. And the ball striking is absolutely ridiculous. He had one bad hole last week, which was a double bogey. Other than that, it was just birdies and pars. So
first in scrambling as well last week.
You say what?
First in scrambling.
My God, if you could replicate that next week, then it's a no contest. The rest of them should just go to the pub and drink Guinness.
You know, when he was struggling, his putter was ice cold. But all of a sudden, it's just that kind of mid 1.7 mark. I know we're talking old currency here, strokes game putting guys over in the States.
Oh, don't go with that one, Steve. The listeners will slaughter us with that.
But, we don't have strokes game data over here, unfortunately. But the putter seems to be less of a concern. And it's just, you know, pounding fairways with that 3-wood. Pounding greens, and when he's missing greens, apart from that double bogey, he seems to be getting up and down. Dangerous. Very dangerous. What do we think as a target score based upon we're 4 days on from the previous podcast. What do we think, looking at the weather, is likely to be that winning score? Do we think it's low teens? Do we think it's single digits?
I think, just looking at the latest forecast, and again, this is likely to change, and then even if it does change, what we actually achieve or what we actually see on Thursday through Sunday can be completely different, as we know, with the vagaries of Lynx Golf. But generally, we're looking at, I think Thursday is looking at the windiest day, around about 15 mile an hour winds.
Right.
And then the Friday through Sunday, generally kind of 10 to 12 mile an hour winds. Although we have seen one forecast that suggests that Saturday the wind could get up and it could be quite gusty, but that may well be an outlying forecast. It feels to me, and again, it's been quite wet, and there's more rain, drizzle, showers.
Wednesday looks very wet. Yeah.
I think, I don't think you can ever describe, unless it's absolutely sopping wet, I don't think you can describe any of these tracks as soft, because I don't think, they drain so well, they're going to be, they're going to quickly dry out. But I don't think it's going to be bone dry, so I don't think you're going to find it firm, really tough, firm and fast condition. I think it will be relatively receptive. To answer your question, I think it's probably going to be getting, 10, 12, something like that under par. Pretty feels about right to me, that kind of bracket. I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't think it's going to be incredibly difficult. I think it's just going to be somewhere in that kind of
low teens,
mid-score bracket. Mm. If the wind doesn't pick up, if you do get a windy Saturday, then perhaps it impacts it. If it is 10 to 15 mile an hour max through the course of the 4 days, the players are going to be able to score heavily. They're going to have to tuck the pins away to give the course some kind of protection. Because I don't think 10 or 15 mile an hour across that track is going to give it the protection that it needs.
So straight 68s across the 4 days, you don't think would be too far away?
Yeah, what's that, 12 under? Yeah, yeah, it's going to be in that kind of bracket, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. Yeah, consistency's key, and see where that kind of total takes you. I don't think it'll get out of control. I don't think it'll be like Renaissance last week where, you know, seeing 22 under winning is, that just wasn't a warm-up that was going to be appropriate for this week. But yeah, equally, I don't think it's going to be a level par job. It looks somewhere wedged between the two of those numbers, I think.
I have to be boring and repetitive and say that I've backed John Rahm and I have backed Henrik Stenson. They're two that I'm on.
Hmm. If you're talking about players that, towards the top of the market, the other one that I can't get away from, and I haven't been able to get away from the last few major championships, is Xander Schauffele. And 28-1, again, it's that same Xander price that we've seen pretty much major in, major out for the last 4 or 6 majors. But this guy, we know that Brooks Koepka, he just lifts his game, doesn't he, for the major championships. His focus is entirely on winning those majors. Mm-hmm. And the results are there to be seen. And Xander, I think, is of very similar ilk. He's the kind of player that is focusing his game and honing his game to perform well at the major championships. And for me, it's a matter of time. He's one of those two players that were, you know, again, we were quite unanimous about in terms of who's going to be a, you know, very soon future major champion under the age of 30 years of age. And he's very, very close. 4 of his last 6 majors have produced an each way payout, if you follow him each way.
Yeah. Second at the Open last year.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That was tricky, wasn't it? Was it 10 under, won it? 11 under, something like that?
It might have been 9 in the end. And 20th at Birkdale on debut, and that was really where, courtesy of his final round, where he shot 65. But last year was far more consistent. He was second, as you said. He was co-leading going into the final day. There were some mistakes there, and clearly Francesco played some fantastic golf on the Sunday to come through. He was 3 behind going into the final day, and 1 by 2 in the end. He's that kind of player. I think one of these events, the door just opened and he'll just saunter through it. 2 wins this season. He won the WGC HSBC Champions event, which clearly was a high class field. Century Tournament Champions, which again was a decent field.
On the coast.
3rd at Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah. 3rd at Pebble Beach on his last start. The ball striking has been really, really strong with Xander. Again, if you're going to pick a hole, the only hole I can reasonably pick in his chances is the fact that he hasn't played since Pebble Beach. If you go back through the stats and the trends, then historically there's been this trend about players playing the Scottish Open and then going on to perform, and that's kind of been extended out to players who've played the week before. I think the way that the schedule's set up this year and the way that the whole schedule's been been squeezed into a shorter time frame with the major championships, the players have had to make some tough decisions, and Xander's made the decision not to play between the US Open and the Open Championship.
He was scheduled to play the Travelers, and then he scratched it. He scratched it before the field came out on Saturday, which would say that he'd got to the point of, well, you know, I want to just actually rest rather. Oh, well, I'll give props here to Pat Mayo, who came out with this statistic. The last player to not play between the US Open and then go on to win the Open was in 1976. And it was Johnny Miller. And interesting with Miller, he was 10th in the US Open and then went on to win the Open in his next appearance. And of course, with Xander, as you said, was he 3rd at the US Open?
Third at Pebble, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
trends are there to be broken, aren't they? They don't always. Absolutely. And I'm with you again. I'm coming across as such a parrot. It's unbelievable. I've backed Xander as well, and I would hate. Well, you and I and Barry as well. We've been talking about Xander now at majors for so long on these podcasts. I just know what would happen if I don't back him because of a trend. Yeah, that's the one he wins. That's the one he wins.
There's the kiss of death, Paul.
He'll miss the cut. Yeah. It's true, isn't it? You know what'll happen.
Sinking or swimming together. I'm going to pass on Xander. If I'm going to grab somebody down there below Stenson, it'll be Ram for me. But the case for Xander is so strong. The thing is, he's like a Brooks Koepka light in that he gets his game up for these, but he hasn't won one. So until then, he's still at that 28-1 price point. I'm like, eh. But at least with Koepka, you know, we've seen that he can go off, play his usual, like, just show up and get his appearance fee in these regular tour events, but come along and he actually goes and wins the major, whereas Xander hasn't done it yet. So, it's a good case that he's got his place payout in four of the last six.
And don't forget, second at the Masters. It's not as if he's just squeaking at the bottom of the each way payout tree. No, he's right in the firing line. And as Paul's always said, and I completely concur with him, you just see it in his eyes. He doesn't back away from these scenarios. He loves the fight of a major. He wants to be in the white heat on a Sunday.
That back nine at Augusta,
very impressive.
When the pressure was on,
never cracked.
He played some incredible golf, and he made some incredible par saves as well. A lot of good scrambling, a lot of good putting to maintain that position. You could see the guile, the determination for him to stay in the hunt until the very last minute. It was there. And that's the kind of mental approach that is going to win a major championship, because someone else might falter. If you can stay in that position, carry on doing what you're doing, the pressure may tell on your opponent, and suddenly that door just wide open for you to step through. It might happen for Xander. I might cave.
Here, listen, I said this. It would happen for Ricky Fowler years ago, but still waiting, you know. I won't be backing Ricky for this. He just looks like those swing changes he's working on just haven't quite clicked. You know, the front nine last week was, on, what was it, Thursday, was quite a shock. He was everywhere.
Yeah, it's not quite right, is it, at the moment, Ricky? That's been reflected in the market as well. He's one of the least loved in the market right now. Unless there's some revelation that comes out in the next day or two that gets people piling on to Ricky Fowler, I can't see there being any love brewing between now and Thursday.
He might just leak out a bit further.
There's a tipping point for everyone, isn't it? You know, at some point, the price will be seen to be value, and suddenly that will shift. But I think if you go through the fundamentals, then his game just doesn't appear to be in the kind of shape that's going to be contending for this title this week.
Who are we loving in the kind of more mid juicy range?
Yeah, I've backed one more before I've gone through my kind of further down the market. And this is another guy that we mentioned on the last podcast or two, Jason Day. And he's not a player I tend to back a massive amount, I must say. 40-1 just felt too long for me for a player that could well be finding that bit of form that he's going to put him back on the straight and narrow in terms of his career. I mean, he's been quite vocal about the fact that he's, you know, by his own estimation, he's underachieved. One major from his career so far probably isn't what he should have, you know, he should be in a higher hall than that. 14 wins, so he's won 14 out of 283, I think it was, starts, 5% there or thereabouts. But if you look at his stats, 74 top 10 finishes. So he's been in contention an incredible amount of times, converted, what, 1 in 5, 1 in 6, 1 in 7, whatever the ratio that ends up being. So he's enlisted the help, as we all know now, he's enlisted the help of Steve Williams to come and work with him as his caddy to push him back to that to the top level, to the very peak of the top level anyway. And having been a previous world number one, he knows what it's like to be there, and obviously wants to get himself back into that kind of position. I mean, he's only been working with Steve a few weeks. The first week we saw was Pebble Beach. He finished 21st. He was good for scrambling, which is not unusual for Jason Day. And that was probably the only highlight of his performance. But it's the two efforts since that really caught my eye. 8th at the Travellers, He led the field for greens in regulation, 87.5%. Now, that's not Jason Day. Jason Day stats tend to be, he'll hit 65% of greens in regulation. He'll scramble incredibly well. He'll putt incredibly well, and he'll get himself into a contending position. When Jason Day is hitting 87% of greens in regulation, you have to take very sharp notice of what's occurring. The week after, at the 3M Open, he tailed off 66, so the finishing position looks awful. Again, 83.3, was sixth in the field for greens in regulation, even that far down the field.
Was he putting so with his eyes closed?
Well, this is the point, isn't it? With Jason Day, we know that his scrambling and his putting can be exceptional. Now, what's to say this week, at 40-1, he doesn't go out there and he plays as he's been playing with his irons, he's hitting greens for fun, and the putter just sparks. He's up and down, he gets up and down, you know, 80% of the time, which he's well capable of doing, and his putter is on fire. Because if he does, he combines all of those together, he wins this Open Championship. Mm. And that's the chance I'm willing to take. I mean, for me, again, the Open Championship isn't his strongest of suits in terms of the majors, yet he has come close. He led going into the final day in 2015. When Zach Johnson won at St Andrews, he finished a shot outside the playoff. So clearly he can play links golf. He's got some titles by the sea on the PGA Tour. There's plenty to grab onto if you are happy to look at those different elements of his career and his CV that point you in this direction. But yeah, for me, there's clearly a focus on trying to improve what he's doing. And I think the Steve Williams effect will be very, very positive for him.
I think it's officially Drill Sergeant Steve Williams.
Yeah.
From the sounds of the things he's got him doing.
That's what he needs. Mm. You know, if he'll have assessed it himself. And if that's what he needs, that's what he needs to move himself back to the kind of ethos and, you know, whatever he was doing before, whatever he needs to be doing with his game and his lifestyle to get himself into the shape and into the mindset to go and win more tournaments and win more major championships.
Jason Day goes full Private Pile and takes out the claret jug. So yeah, he's the thing I've got. Like, we've all been burned by backing Jason Day, and back being the operative word here. So you know, temperature is not going to be. It's going to be like 16, 17 Celsius, which is pretty cold in terms of compared to the temperatures they usually play in the States. So. That would bring question marks for me over his, I don't know, his back or whatever. But, you know, maybe he's, dangerous.
He might, you know, that kind of temperature, he might contract the flu, you know, on Monday, Tuesday.
Or potato blight, or that. Sorry, I shouldn't make an Irish joke, but that's terrible. Okay, well, I'm going to counter that. I'm going for another Australian just to go to my next bet and get off Jason Day, lest you convince me to back him. So he ticks a few boxes for me. He's had a win this season, albeit it was in 2018. He won the CIMB Classic and nearly lost in a playoff in the CJ Cup around the same time, so was very hot back then. Has three top sixes in his last five Open Championships. Got into a playoff in the one that was Zach Johnson won in 2015, I think.
St Andrews.
And you know, loves kind of slightly gnarly conditions when the wind is blowing. There's a bit of rain. Just seems to be a good gritty battler. And I think if I'm, you know, just was thinking about this earlier, going back to like the Masters podcast, and we were talking about him and. Everybody seems, there seems to be a lot of like love for him when it comes around to Masters time. But that was, you know, we looked a bit deeper into that. That was all built on one good performance he had at Augusta. So it was easy enough to write him off as a bet for there, but it's not as easy to write him off as a bet for the Open Championship. And, you know, Mark Leishman just really kind of stuck out to me. I was able to kind of get a boosted odds on him at 66-1, 10 places with Paddy Power. And well, I've gone for the same kind of combo I did on Woodland. You know, did an each way bet, but also put a nice little amount on the exchange and just see can I max out that win. I got him at 100 on the exchange. And, you know, even recent form is pretty good. He'd fifth at Muirfield Village. He was 35th at the US Open, 21st the week after that. He's taken himself a nice little break. And, you know, I was happy enough to pick him up for all the above reasons.
Yeah. I know Steve and myself have both backed him and tipped him at various major championships over the years. And he does have that kind of major mentality, major feel about him as a person. I think that there's a fair chance that he does grab one at some point during his career, and I can't dispute your logic there, Barry. I think at that kind of price, there are a few players that don't make more appeal than Mark Leishman.
I think a couple of quid on Leishman on the exchange is a very savvy move. In fact, I might do it just now.
The
average age of the winner of the Open since 2011 is 36, and Mark Leishman is 35. Mm. He's the kind that will win an unfashionably, I don't know, and he'll win a major, and if it does get gnarly and nasty on Saturday and rainy, and he's the kind of bloke that will just hang around. He's far too good to not be in the heat of a major battle, I think, at some stage, and potentially come out the winner. Yeah, I think that's an intelligent punt, that is.
He's the Gary Woodland of this month. You know, that's all I have to go on. Living on my past victories, so I gotta try pull one more out, you know, just to make 2019 an epic year and possibly retire from punting. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, we'll see. Look, there's been many times in the past I've had money on him and he's just gone and tanked. So, you know, there all of these all of our punts, and
he'll be coming into this with very few expectations. I'd have thought he played okay at the Travelers, so I tipped him up. He was all right, wasn't too bad. So I think he started quite well. I think he started very well in the first round and then fell away. I'm researching some first round leader bets, and Leishman interests me in that market because he started very well at the Travelers, and there is a trend where people that start well at the Open in quite a few seconds. Kevin Kisner was so left field last year, it was unbelievable. But they have had a first round leader in their last outing, top three, win even, top five, and Leishman fits that category perfectly. So, yeah.
You often do find little spates of fast starts for players if you are looking in that market. It's one of those markets that can.
Kisner was so left field last year. It was unbelievable. You would never have picked him. He was 55th at Greenbrier, missed cut, and that goes completely against what anything from 2012 onwards. You know, Scott, Zach, Rory, first round leader I'm talking. He just blew that away totally. But if we go back to trend, Leishman is the kind of player that will just pop out first round leader or get close to the top of the leaderboard. I do like that.
Oh, I might go all in on them and add the first round leader bet. Just while we're on that, as they're just little side bets, not the main ones, I did put on one first round leader bet today, and it was only just because of his disappointment on Sunday last week. But Erik van Rooyen seems to have that kind of bounce back ability about him. He'll be gutted with how he played last Sunday. And, you know, that's my kind of logic for him, just bouncing back and just going all in, bang, shoots a low number.
It's a few times he's been really disappointing on a Sunday. I'd backed him the week before, and of course, as soon as you don't back him the week after, he's suddenly flying up the leaderboard. And again, he was in great position to really contend yesterday, Sunday, and then quadruple bogey, wasn't it, early on in his round, second, third hole, which just knocked him straight off the scent. And when birdies are being made for fun like they were last week at Renaissance, you can't do that. But yeah, the flip side of it is he is starting fast enough to get himself into those kind of positions. So, you know, I can see logic there, Barry.
I think I'll jump in at this point because we're at the kind of price point where this guy jumps out of me, and he's going to probably, with Leishman, I think you've sold me Leishman, Barry. So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to spare a couple of pounds, I think, for Leishman.
We're in serious trouble here. Yeah.
This is either going to be the biggest celebration ever, or
the biggest nightmare ever. But there you go.
Yeah.
If we're talking great form, and if we're talking a Open Championship top 10 is essential, I think there are far worse bets out there than Eddie Pepperell. And I mentioned this last week. I'm not overly concerned about last week. A pitch and putt at whatever 20 under or whatever it was isn't his style. But 43rd last week, just tightened up his driving, which I like the look of. He's been hitting greens of late and he's putting fantastically well. So fourth at the Irish Open, second at the British Masters, again, that they played at Hillside on a Lynx track. And then you go back to last year, he won, didn't he, at Walton Heath. Again, that was a cold, windy. We were there on the Thursday. There were tables flying around and everything on that Thursday at Walton Heath. You can throw wind at him. You can throw a bit of weather at him. And he just seems to be a real Lynx expert, doesn't he? Second at the Scottish Open last year. Sixth at the British Open when he played half cut in the final round. I could see Pepperell, who also qualifies on this world golf ranking rule, top 40, he's 35th in the world at the moment. If you're looking for a real links specialist and, you know, an unlikely English winner, bearing in mind we've just won the World Cup cricket and we've got that glow over here of being, you know, world champion, I could see Pepperell just going very well this week. And I think up to 80-1 available out there on Pepperell is a good bet. 66 is 10 places each way is more than available.
He's stepped up again his game, hasn't he? You know,
yeah, third at the Players you mentioned last week as well, because you mentioned him. You know, he can now mix it at the top table in top world level or major events, in my opinion.
Yeah, Qatar Masters winner as well, and with Qatar, that often you often find very links positive players appearing on the leaderboard.
Yeah, that's when he won his first title, wasn't it, Qatar?
Yeah, it was whether it was his first or second, but yes, he won there relatively recently. Mm. But yes, he's. At that price, you could take a chance on him and quite happily sit there and see how he performs. Clearly, he had a layoff before he came back at the Hinch and finished well there, due to his back, and perhaps he just eased down last week, took his foot off the throttle, so that he's going to be in decent shape for the Open Championship.
I'm in, Steve.
You're in, are you?
I've got yeah. That's it. We're this is it. We're all rowing together in the same direction here.
I've turned my back on Matt Kuchar, so I haven't backed Kuchar, and. Let's hope that doesn't come back to bite us. But I think in that range, you on Leishman, I'm now on Leishman, and I think Pepperell is worse bet. And I know Paul's got another one that he fancies at this kind of 80-90-1 range.
Yeah, the one I've backed in that bracket is Webb Simpson, who's we know Webb's got the major pedigree, hasn't he? He won the 2012 US Open.
Yeah.
His last 10 majors, he's missed and he's made the cut every single time. Fifth at Augusta this year.
Yeah.
Last year, won at Sawgrass. You know, his ball striking's been particularly strong over the last couple of years. He's been solidly in that kind of 20th in the world OWGR ranking for that period of time. He's just hovered around that level, and that's been fed by some very consistent and good finishes. He hasn't won again since Sawgrass, but he's put himself in the mix in some decent events. And the thing with Simpson is that his putting, which was always going to be a challenge after the change to the rules with his belly putter, he's adapted to that, and he's now turned his putting into a strength. I mean, 18th for the season for total putting, 22nd for strokes gained putting for the season. It's very, very strong, and you know what could have been and what was for a period of time one of his downfalls, he's turned into a strength of his game. And
very true.
You couple that with his ball striking ability, and again, when it all clicks on a given week, it can be pretty explosive. I mean, that Sawgrass win, he from pillar to post.
Oh, mate, he almost lapped the field, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was outstanding. Mm. On his last start, US Open, he led the field for total putts. Finished 16th overall. He was good for putts per greens regulation. Look at the old numbers as well. Before that, in Canada, his long game had been good. He was really good from tee to green. His scrambling was spot on. Again, as always, you know, if you try and tie these things together, you can see that all facets of his game have been performing over the last few weeks. He ties it together in 1 week. He contends for another major championship. So yeah, I couldn't resist Webb at 90-1. I think that was a fair price.
12th last year in his last Open. Mm. That was his best finish. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's lots to like with him. There's lots to like.
Should we go bomb hunting?
Except his golf swing. Mm. I can't stand his golf swing.
Well, you can't stand Kuchar or Simpson, can you, sir?
Well, I think it makes me more interesting person that I have golfers I dislike.
No, that's fine. I've got plenty of golfers I dislike. Most weeks,
there's a few
to be
more
fair.
on the shit list.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's firmly on mine, so you can have him to yourself, Paul.
Should we go bomb hunting? Because we just know that someone's going to be at a triple digit big price that gets right involved this week. Who's it going to be?
Yeah.
Who's it going to be?
It's regular, isn't it? The Open can be that major where you do see a lot of 200, 300 to 1 players getting into the paying each way places.
When you looked into it, Paul, was there anything that kind of linked some of these triple digit numbers together? Was there anything that they'd done in the past, or was it literally just random, totally random?
No, it wasn't totally random. I think if you look through and try to correlate what the players who were in that kind of price bracket had done, mm-hmm. Particularly over the recent major championships. If you went back to 18 months, 2 years, so the previous 6 or 8 major championships,
right.
A lot of them, a big chunk of the players who had placed in that kind of bracket had produced around about a top 20, top 15 major finish.
Okay.
And some of them have produced far better than that, but I'm talking kind of 80% or so, had shown some kind of aptitude at a major championship.
Right.
They'd also shown an aptitude at some stronger events, just sporadically over the last couple of years. I mean, you, if you're picking a player at that kind of price, then there's always going to be something just by eyeballing either his current form or his event form or something that says, well, I can't back him. And you know, the reason that you're getting the price on him is because there's something fairly obvious there.
Yep.
But if you can read between the lines, if you can find a player who's been flashing those little bits of form here and there in recent weeks, and you know, an odd good round here or there, or some consistent ball striking or an improvement with the putter, and that's, you know, if that's against their normal gameplay, something that you can latch on to, couple that with some decent finishes at major championships in the recent-ish past, and take a chance on them.
Okay.
And that was kind of my logic, I ended up with two that I've backed at 200 to 1 and 300 to 1 respectively. The first of which is Lucas Glover, 2009 US Open champion. Now, he only won once since then, but he's certainly shown some improvement over the last 6-9 months or so. 7th at Pebble, 4th at Honda, 10th at the Arnold Palmer, 3rd at the 3M Open the week before last, and then 10th last week at the John Deere Classic. So he's got immediate incoming form of 2 consecutive top 10s. 16th at the USPGA, back at Bethpage Black, where he'd won the US Open back in 2009. That was his best major finish, 16th, for 8 years on tour. So clearly he felt comfortable going back to the scene of his biggest victory. But that will give him a bit of confidence coming into this week. Now, we know with Glover, putting is the real bugbear. And I've backed him a number of times, and you kind of have to close your eyes sometimes when you see him on the coverage is about to miss a 3-footer or a 2-footer for par or birdie. But what we've seen, particularly this season, is a real step change in his performance with the putter. Now, I'll give you strokes gained putting numbers for the last 3 years. 2016, he was 132nd on tour. 2017, 113th. 2018, last year, 154th for strokes gained putting. At the moment, he sits 46th. So that is a seismic change in terms of his performance. Coupled up with the fact that he's an excellent ball striker, and he is an excellent ball striker, if he puts it together, again, you know, I'll say the same thing as some of my other tips. If he puts it together this week, he can contend at a particularly long price. 200 to 1 with 10 places have gone in. A little bit of form out there in terms of Open Championship. He was 12th at Sandwich in 2011, where Darren Clarke won.
Yeah,
and he co-led. He co-led at the halfway point.
We were there. We were wondering what the hell was going on at the top of the leaderboard. We'd had about 8 pints of that, and we're going, Lucas Glover?
He's made some putts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's a level of confidence that hasn't been there in recent years and that has started to creep into his game. And that can only be positive for a player like Lucas Glover, who only needs that putter to be warm and or lukewarm, and it's going to contend in a lot of events. And yeah, I think he could sneak into a top 10 this week. Do you want to go through? I can do the last one, or do you want to go for it? You guys want to dive?
He's certainly a bomb. Go on. I know what your last one is.
Yeah, the last one is Jana Watson-Lund.
Easy for you to say, mate. I've mulled that on the golf betting show today when I was recording it. That's the only reason you put him in.
I haven't listened back to your YouTube today.
But you probably called...
It's a total Muller job, mate.
No, you probably called him Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince or something like that, Steve. Like,
I think I just called him Jazz.
Jazzy stuff, Far Asian. I've made an attempt at it anyway.
Buzaidenhoo's the one I'm trying to get.
Buzaidenhoo.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Buzaidenhoo. Go on.
I need a speculative punt, but this tie is going to be a sensational player. He's going to be a very strong player in the future. 2 wins this season so far, 8 more top fives. I mean, mostly at a lower grade, and you know, you could argue that, you know, they've been on the Asian tour, the All Thailand tour, or the Japan tour, but some of them have been, you know, eye catching. Singapore Open, he beat the likes of Paul Casey, Matt Fitzpatrick, Sergio Garcia. They all finished behind him at Singapore earlier this season. 3rd at the Maybank on the European tour was his best European tour finish of his career to date. So again, there's another tick in the box for, you know, improving form at a higher level. And 14th at the USPGA, though. 2nd major championship that he played. He was in the penultimate group going into Sunday. You know, massive pressure on a player that's not been in that position at a major championship before. And to be fair, all of the players in those final 2 groups, they all struggled. I mean, Hal Varner ended up shooting 81, I think it was, from the final group alongside Koepka. 77, he shot. He ended up going down to 14th spot overall, but good experience. Top 7 ball striking in 3 of his last 4 starts. 26th on his last start at the Japan PGA Championship. But within that, and again, we were just talking a second ago about, you know, those small pockets of form, those small indications that a player's playing well. He shot a 63 on the Saturday. That was the best round of the entire tournament at the Japan PGA Championship. For me, 300 to 1 winning probably is a bit of a stretch to say that Jazz is going to win the Open Championship. But if we can get an each way place out of him, I've gone top 8 for 300 to 1. And if we can get a top 8 performance out of him this week, then that's, you know, that's as good as a win from one of the players at the top end of the market. So I'll take that every day of the week if that's the only result I get from this particular week. But yeah, they're my 6 against the field this week.
Any bombs, Barry, for you?
I've won, but it's like not legit anymore because you can't get the price. Backed him last week as we were recording. Was down to, I can't remember, one of the listeners was mentioning Wiesberger, I think it was through the Facebook post, about, you know, players they thought for the Open. And, you know, he was, it just made sense. So I managed to get him at 125s when we were recording on Friday, and he's now half that price. So it's a price play. He's going to need to do a Phil Mickelson and go back to back. if he's going to win the Open Championship. But you know, he's playing so well, I could definitely see him pop in and grab a top 10.
Didn't Rafa Cabrera Bayo a few years ago win the Scottish, and then he came fourth or sixth the week after at the Open? I'm sure he did.
It does happen. If you go back, Tyrrell Hatton had done, I think he'd finished second, and then he performed well at the Open Championship.
Because we always say, never back the guy who wins the tournament for the Masters, because they do absolutely nothing. But it isn't the case with this, is it? You know, going back to Mickelson in 2013. I'm not saying they win it, but they can certainly contend 2 weeks on the bounce. It's such a specialised
test. But even Francesco last year as well. I'm in on it now. He's now half the price. So you know, how can you complain about him winning the tournament yesterday? Sorry, being handed the tournament by Benjamin Hébert on his jelly snake putter. I felt so bad from watching him miss those putts.
Painful to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was pressure for you, though, Barrett.
It was like watching Siwoo Kim putt in Hilton Head, you know, when you're on him at 200-1.
You'd never expect a French golfer to crack under pressure, would you?
Around the time of Steve, come on now.
They're terrible for it. We'll go back to Levy at the old BMW a few years ago. Jeez.
You're dragging up some memories, Levy and Siwoo Kim, that I didn't want to be thinking about.
Just hold back from going full Jean Van de Velde, Steve, would you? It's not fair. I mean, do you remember Victor Dubuisson at the World Match Play just absolutely pulling out shots from all over the place? He didn't crumble. So, yeah, it's not just, okay, let's move forward before you start a little Franco-Anglo war. So one I have just missed out on getting 250s, 10 places. I just missed out on getting him with Boyle Sports. He dropped to 200 there, but I'm going after the 10 places is Beef. So had a cracking final round last week. And, you know, there's been a lot in the news about him with his, you know, him coming out to talk about his suffering from depression and, you know, the support that he's got out of that. He's going to be feeling on cloud nine and probably unbelievably relieved that he's actually kind of brought this out in public. Yeah. It'll be a big weight off his shoulders. And it kind of reminds me back to the year that Stenson won in Troon. Beef was actually kind of he was the alternate story that was going on, because there was no other story than Stenson and Mickelson just throwing haymakers at each other for the last 36 holes. And I remember the crowd taking to Beef and just cheering his name and him absolutely loving it. And I can just see that same sort of thing happening this week. He's going to go in there buzzing, playing obviously very good golf, and if he can slip in to get a top 10 from 200-1, yeah, that's almost as good as getting the winner.
Paul has always said with Beef, and we can see that because he's win at Valderrama, the higher the scoring, the better it is for him. So for him to do what he did last week at that absolute birdie fest was eye-catching, wasn't it? There's two in the odds at that they're separated by one player. The two I were going to mention was Andrew Beef Johnson and Andrew Putnam, who I think, again, he kind of ticks what Paul was saying. Someone that's done something at a world golf level. And Putnam was fourth at the HSBC. He finished fourth last week at the Scottish Open. So him and Johnston available up to 250-1. Yeah. You can get 250s now on Putnam as well. I think they're two decent shouts.
Yeah, I mean,
Johnston was eighth in that Open you mentioned, Barry.
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
So I could have got a little bit longer on the odds, but I decided I'm going with the max places and sacrificing that tiny bit up on the top side price.
No, don't blame me.
Just to grab the extra couple of places is beneficial. Anyway, we'll find out if it is beneficial or not. So,
well, no, I can see your logic, and you know that the interview with Beef after yesterday was, you know, it was massively emotional for him, as you can see. But perhaps, as you say, it's like a weight off his shoulders that will free him up to play some really competitive golf. And it's so popular, and you know, you can't but like the guy. He's just one of those characters that deserves to be supported in, you know, everything he does. I think so. Wish him well, and I can see a logic, Barry. I really can.
I think that's us then, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, before
we've exhausted, covered about 2/3 of the field, so we should be about there.
Sure. Yeah, before I go backing any more while we're talking about them, you know, doing these podcasts is dangerous unless I'm backing winners.
We're always asked this. I'll ask you guys one last question, and then we'll say goodbye to the listeners. Who would you hate to win?
Webb Simpson.
Pardon? Well, I was asking it more on the basis that you came close to backing them. But yeah, okay, if it's Webb Simpson, it's Webb Simpson.
It is.
You'd say that every tournament that he plays, Barry. I know you
won't. Barry must sit there cringing.
He hates the guy, doesn't he? He'd never want to meet him.
He's probably a lovely dude. I don't know. You got to hate somebody, right? I always blame him for Podrick not winning the US Open in Olympic Hills, even though it was completely Podrick's fault. But anyway, Simpson gets it. Who did I come really close on? Very close on Patrick Cantlay. He had a 12th last year, obviously has kind of gone up a level this year. Winning at Memorial was extremely impressive. All parts of the game seem to be firing. I don't know whether he has enough Lynx experience under his belt to take on a really proper Lynx test like Portrush. I had to poke a hole in it somewhere, and I just didn't have enough Lynx experience there for me to back him. So that's where I got really close on. I was thinking about maybe a slightly long bet on Thorbjørn Olesen, but his odds seem to have tumbled in. He's just been proven extremely popular. So he's in it like 100-1 now. So I don't know. What about you guys?
The dilemma for me, as I said at the top of the show, was whether to back Rory or not. And
we barely mentioned Rory.
No, and
he could just wallow. I have put a saver on Rory just in case.
It won't
win me much money, but at least it covers the week.
It would, yeah. Having decided not to back him, it would be rather disappointing to see him go and win now. But I still have this fear that he will go and perform in his homeland and kind of convert that dream. But we shall see. The one at a longer price that was the last off my list was Brandt Snedeker. And I just couldn't quite pull the trigger with Snedeker, particularly having backed 6 already. I think for me that's more than enough for a week. But I think Snedeker could go well. He's been showing elements of his game have been in decent form recently. So I wouldn't surprise me to see him put a decent shift in.
But Paul, hang on a second. If you're backing with bookies that have 8 places to fill, then you could add 2 more golfers and get all 8 of your guys in the top 8. That's how it works, right?
Yeah, I think I'll stick with 6, mate.
Sned's be a hard one for me to back.
The one I'm persuading myself not to back is Kuchar. I've got to try and resist that. That's like backing Paul Casey, isn't it? I think the other one that could. Potentially, I mean, he does break the top 10 trend, but one that is playing hot golf is Bryson. He just clearly hasn't got that Open Championship top 10 or results that you'd be looking for. In fact, I don't think he's top 10 at a major, but it's coming. And he is one of the hottest golfers on the planet right now. So having finished second on him 2 weeks ago, and you're seeing him at 40s, but I don't know.
I can't see him getting the head around Lynx golf course yet. I think what you do, Steve, is put that note on him for Augusta next year, like you were mentioning.
Oh, yeah, the podcast, yeah. Or he wins at Southwind the week after in the WGC.
Potentially.
Yeah.
He's
coming in hot, isn't he, DeChambeau? He's going to win something very soon.
Yeah, that was, it was kind of funny seeing his face when he...
Oh, God, yeah.
Was it Martin? That eagle putt dropped last...
Is that for eagle? He could not believe it. He thought he had that tournament won in a playoff, mate.
Yeah, and going into the playoff, he would have been the hot favourite to win that, wouldn't he?
That was damaging for me anyway, but yes. Okay. Well, I appreciate your time, chaps. It's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, best of luck, guys. Hopefully we can get one of these players over the line, or one that we've multiply backed between us.
Best of luck
to you. Yeah, that, hopefully we'll all win together. And listen, best of luck to all the listeners. And get those alarm clocks set early for Thursday morning.
It's going to be a cracker.
Best of luck to all the listeners, as Barry said. And I'll just throw in, if you listeners are on Twitter and you've got some questions for us, you've got our Twitter handles at the front end. I'll just repeat them. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. Throw us some questions. If you've got any questions that you want to ask us, just throw us some questions on Twitter and we'll get back to you. Right, thank you, chaps. Enjoyed the time, and we will be back again next week for the Golf Betting System podcast. Goodbye.